Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 203, The Root Cause. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. And for today's episode, we're going to be going subterranean and we're going to get our feet dirty and talk about root vegetables. So I can't wait to dig into that. But of course, before we get there, just a little bit of housekeeping. First and foremost, the show notes for this episode will be at kitchencounterpodcast.com/203. That's kitchencounterpodcast.com/203 for the show notes with links to things I mentioned in the show, along with the recipe I'm going to share a little bit later. So you can find everything there. You know, I always talk too about email addresses and how to contact me, like by emailing feedback at Kitchen Counter Podcast or finding me on Instagram at Kitchen Counter Podcast or Twitter or Facebook and all that sort of stuff. You know, if you just go to those show notes, you don't have to remember anything I tell you because I'll put them all in there. So it might be just a little bit easier, but you know, if you're interested in Facebook, head over to facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. And also, we have a lot of good discussions over in our private Facebook group, the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break. That's always worth it if you're a Facebooker and you don't mind joining groups. We have a great group of home cooks over there. Always something interesting going on, whether it's questions being asked or pictures of food being shared. Always something tasty going on in there. And it's a good group of folks. We keep the spam out of it as much as we can. So if you're interested in that, the easiest way to find it is actually going to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group, and that will take you right to the group page on Facebook where you can ask to join. Also, don't forget the Kitchen Counter Podcast is a member of the Nitty Grits Podcasts out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana. To find out more about the network and the other podcasts, in addition to the Kitchen Counter that you can find there, along with all of the great stuff being offered at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, which, by the way, they're doing a lot of stuff online these days for obvious reasons. So even if you're not in New Orleans and you want to find out more about the museum or partake in some of their events, go to southernfood.org and see what they have going on. You might find something that's of interest. Well, last but not least, one other thing I want to mention is if you listen to the last episode, the January Smorgasbord, you'll know I talked about how over the years folks have approached me and said, you know, they'd like to support the show in ways other than just telling their friends or family about it or rating it on their favorite podcast app. And if they wanted to support the show, how could they do that? And of course, I've got the Amazon affiliate link. So if you buy something through an Amazon link on my pages, on my website at kitchencounterpodcast.com, I'll get a few pennies of that and you won't pay any more for it. So that's one way you can support the show. But if you'd rather just buy me a coffee and support the show, you can do that because I've set up a buy me a coffee page for the podcast. It's kind of like a Patreon, if you're familiar with that. Only my setup is much more simple. It's just a place you can, they call it buying a coffee, but it's really just making a cash donation of really whatever amount you want. I think it's $5 or whatever else. You can buy me multiple coffees. And actually somebody did buy me some coffees last week. So I just want to say thank you. You know who you are. That money is going right into my Lamborghini fund. I'm kidding. It's going to hosting fees for hosting all the podcast audio files. So thank you so much for the support. If you're interested in doing that, it's buymeacoffee.com/TKC podcast. All right. But all that stuff isn't why you're here today, right? You want to hear about home cooking stuff. And today, we're going to dig in, pun intended, to the wide, crazy world of root vegetables. So without further ado, let's hop right into it. Ah, root vegetables, a wintertime feast for the senses, even though really they're available all year round, pretty much wherever you're at. Probably some of the most unsexy products in the produce department down there at your local supermarket or farmer's market, for that matter. Often an afterthought if they're thought of at all by the home cook, which is too bad because I really think they hold some interesting options. Now, this might be different depending on where you live in the world, but if I say the word root vegetables, you probably think, at least I think, of things like potatoes and carrots. And if you go into any supermarket produce department here in the United States, you'll easily find these usual suspects. Just down the road at my local Safeway, the produce aisle, there's a giant table in the middle of the produce aisle with all varieties of potatoes. I mean, it's a huge display. You can't miss it. They really take up premium real estate in the produce department. So do onions and garlic. They have a fairly big table all their own as well. Carrots you can always find. They're usually right out in front of some other popular vegetables, so you can't miss them, right? We eat a lot of carrots in the United States. I mean, even the gangly ginger root finds its way into our shopping baskets fairly reliably. And that's great. All of those vegetables I just mentioned are fantastic vegetables with wide, wide ranges of use for the home cook. I mean, onions and garlic are in probably 90% of the savory recipes I cook. But if you venture into some of the lesser traveled corners of the produce department, you're going to find the rest of the roots. It's the realm of the rutabagas and the radishes, the kingdom of the kohlrabi and the cassava, and they do really hold some amount of mystery for a lot of home cooks. Now, I don't want to overgeneralize. I know a lot of the folks listening to this podcast are probably very, very familiar with other root vegetables besides the common ones I already named. But I think more often than not, people tend to avoid them because, well, maybe they just don't know what to do with them. Or for the description I just gave, maybe they're just placed in such a way where you just blow right by them because you're going from the carrots over to the cilantro and you just don't even look at where they're at or what they are. So let's take a few minutes and demystify root vegetables. And I'm not going to have time to get into every nuance and every particular type of root vegetables that exist, of course. But let's hit some of the highlights. First, I want to talk about what a root vegetable actually is and some different terms you might hear for a variety of root vegetables like tubers or rhizomes. We'll talk about what those mean. And then, of course, we'll talk about how to find root vegetables and what you want to look for, a little bit about storage, and then cooking with your root vegetables, what actually to do with them in your kitchen. So first things first, what is a root vegetable? Well, let me just preface this by saying, A, I am not a botanist, so you'll probably hear me get things wrong as far as purely scientific botanical descriptions of some of these things. And as far as I know, the term root vegetable is not even a botanical term. It's more of a culinary term, which works good for us because it provides an easy umbrella of vegetables into which we can place some of the things we're going to talk about. So even though it might not be botanically correct, we're going to go with it. So the root vegetables that I'm going to talk about today we'll categorize into three, let's just say, subcategories of root vegetables. And there's probably even more, but we're going to stick to a couple of these in a little more depth. First, I would say, would be your true root vegetables. And what is a root vegetable? Well, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a vegetable that is a root of a plant. And if you look at these types of root vegetables, I'm just going to keep using the example of your produce department in your local grocery or supermarket. These are the roots that are directly connected to the greens of the plant. So they grow right underneath the surface of the soil. In many cases, parts of them might pop up above the surface of the soil, but they're directly connected to the actual stems of the plant. Probably one of the true root vegetables that most of us are familiar with would be carrots. That's a taproot. But if you've ever seen a carrot grow, or even if you haven't, just Google what a carrot looks like when it's growing. And you can see that the green tops of the carrots pop up above the ground. And oftentimes, just the very little tip top of the carrot where the greens connect pop up above the ground too. So that's a true root vegetable. The root is actually directly connected to the greens of the plant. In root vegetables, all of the nutrients and energy and minerals that that plant needs to thrive or at least survive, say, over a long winter, are stored in that root. So they're really a powerhouse of nutrients that people can take advantage of. In fact, they're one of the most nutritionally important crops in the world. Just to go on a quick tangent, if you had the Mount Rushmore of important food crops in terms of how many calories they supply to the world's population, in the first spot up there, you'd have corn or maize, extremely important for the world food supply. You'd have rice, is probably up there as number two. Maybe number three would be wheat. And, you know, between those three broad categories, they account for about 50% or a little above 50% of the world's caloric supply. In the fourth spot, you'd have root vegetables or tubers or some combination thereof, but coming in at 5 or 6% of the world's caloric supply, you'd have things like cassava, potatoes, sweet potatoes, things like that. So they are an important source of food. And I'm guessing one of the reasons they're not that popular, I think, in today's home kitchens, at least in the United States, is because we have so many other options and so many different types of produce available from all over the world all year around that I think we just tend to overlook some of the less glamorous root vegetables out there. But hopefully we'll change that. So some examples of the true root vegetables that I mentioned will be carrots, of course, onions, garlic, shallots, beets, turnips and rutabagas, kohlrabi, radishes, including daikon and horseradish, celery root, also known as celeriac, and the carrot's sweeter, more snappy cousin, parsnips. There's more than that, but these are some of the more common ones you'll find in your typical grocery store. Now, if we go farther down under the umbrella of root vegetables, we'll come across tubers. Now, again, any botanist listening to this episode, I apologize, but as I understand the difference between a tuber and a true root vegetable is a tuber actually grows down farther along the root system. They're not directly attached to the greens of the plant. They're attached to the root system. So a simple example of a tuber would be your average, ordinary, everyday potato. If you see a potato plant out in a field, it'll look green and leafy. When you dig it up, as you pull it up, you'll see the potatoes are attached down along the root system, not directly to the greens of the plant. So they're a tuber that grow along the root system. Other varieties of tubers would be sweet potatoes, yams, and cassava, also called manioc, which is where we get tapioca starch. Now, tubers, just for the record, tend to be a lot more starchy than the previously mentioned root vegetables. Keep that in mind. That'll be important a little bit later when we talk about how you can use these in your cooking. Now, another subcategory of root vegetables that I will mention, but I'm not going to really talk about, they're out of scope for this particular episode, but will be something we would call rhizomes. And a rhizome is a root that grows horizontally underneath the ground, and it contains something called nodes from which it sends up shoots that reach the surface of the ground, break through, and turn into plants. Ginger probably being the most famous example of a culinary rhizome. Turmeric is also an example of a rhizome. So now you have a really basic understanding about the differences between true root vegetables, tubers, rhizomes. You're at the market. What is it that you're looking for in any particular root vegetable when you're picking them out? So as a rule of thumb, across the board for root vegetables, pretty much, you're going to look for smaller vegetables that feel heavy for their size. You want firm vegetables, unlike fruit, where you're oftentimes looking for a little bit of give or a little softness to indicate their ripeness. The firmer, the better when it comes to root vegetables, and inspect for soft spots, which can be signs of decay. One of the virtues of root vegetables, if you have a large amount of them, is you can store them for a long period of time, as long as you have a cool, dry place, like a root cellar, for example, or a cool garage. And soft spots or softness indicate that spoilage is already starting to happen and that they're probably not going to last all that long if that's what you intend for them. Also, most true root vegetables can be found in the market with some portion of the green plant still attached. You want to look for greens on those vegetables that look fresh. They don't look wilted or decayed because those things would indicate that those root vegetables have been out of the ground for quite a while already before they even get into your hands. When you do get them home, though, go ahead and take the greens off of them, because as long as those greens are attached, they're taking resources out of that delicious, delicious root part of the vegetable. Now, I mentioned storing in a cool, dry place is, of course, a rule of thumb, but I'll put a link in the show notes that has a pretty good rundown of different types of root vegetables and the best way to store them. I don't really store root vegetables all that much because I buy them and I use them fairly soon after I get them. So I never worry too much about storing them. Though I will say I store fall and winter squash in our garage just in a box, you know, for several months without any problem because it's cool enough here in the wintertime that that generally works out okay. I think for the root vegetables, the same thing in general would apply. All right, so we have an idea of what we're talking about when we're talking about root vegetables in general. We have a little bit of an idea of what we're looking for when we head to the market to pick up some root vegetables. So what do we actually do with root vegetables in the kitchen? Well, here's the really, really good news about most root vegetables, and that is they are widely interchangeable with one another. So when you find a recipe you like with a particular root vegetable, it's generally a pretty simple matter just to swap in other types of root vegetables. In fact, I remember reading, and I don't have it, I'll try to find it if I can to put in the show notes, but there was a column that Mark Bittman wrote maybe years ago now, but he was singing the virtues of root vegetables, and he had a line in there that I've kind of always remembered, and it stuck in my brain, and I'm summarizing here, so I'm not quoting this exactly. He said something to the effect that home cooks can easily start to explore the variety of root vegetables out there by taking your favorite potato recipe and then switching those out for root vegetables of your choice. He said something like, it almost always works and the results are usually surprisingly good, or something like that. But I've always remembered that, and it is somewhat of a truism with root vegetables. Now, there's always exceptions to the rule. And if you just go out and start buying root vegetables and experimenting, you'll probably have some failures, like we do with every new cooking venture or working with a new ingredient that we tackle. But it is really a great rule of thumb. If you're familiar with cooking potatoes, there are a wide variety of root vegetables that can be swapped right in. I mean, think of things like turnip French fries or rutabaga hash browns. Practically any root vegetable purees or mashes very nicely, so they can either be a replacement for mashed potatoes, or if you're not fully sold on going with a new root vegetable for your mash, you could do a 50-50. Substitute half of your potatoes in for a different root vegetable, and you'll keep a toehold on the comfortable, familiar potato, but you'll be branching out as well, and you might be surprised to what you find and eager to explore more. I should say, too, that you don't even have to cook a lot of root vegetables to enjoy them. A wide variety of root vegetables can be eaten raw and are commonly enjoyed raw. And I would say, I'd have to look at the comprehensive list, but in my mind, most of the root vegetables that are true root vegetables, that is, the root is attached to the greens of the plant, most of those can be eaten raw wonderfully. It's when you get into the more starchy, like the tubers, potatoes, cassava, sweet potatoes, those generally are not good eaten raw and must be cooked or processed somehow. But the ones that are more true root vegetables, like I'm just looking at the quick list that I wrote, you know, carrots, parsnips, beets, celery root, turnips, rutabagas, kohlrabi, radishes, all of those can be eaten raw, whether they're shaved off or sliced off for a salad or cut into matchsticks, for a vegetable platter, and a lot of them have a wonderful, spicy, herby flavor. So don't overlook the fact that you can use a lot of these root vegetables raw. It is important to note, though, that some root vegetables should be cooked thoroughly before being eaten for safety purposes, like cassava, which can be toxic if eaten raw. Which brings up a good reminder in general. If you're ever unsure when working with a new ingredient, what are the safe ways to prepare it? You know, we talk about this sometimes when we talk about cooking proteins, you know, cooking to safe temperatures and things like that. It's always a good idea to consult local health guidelines or national health guidelines. You should be able to find resources on whatever ingredient you want to work with on what constitutes safe preparation. Now, about a decade ago, at least in the United States, I would say chefs and home cooks alike were starting to turn on to the idea that one of the best things you can do with root vegetables, and one of the easiest things, is to roast them. It's still one of my favorite preparations for any type of root vegetable, and it is incredibly easy. So let's talk about roasting for a second, and then I'm actually going to share a recipe with you for a puree that also includes roasting as one of the steps in the recipe. But if nothing else, I think these two preparations will get you off and running when it comes to working with root vegetables. So roasting is very simple. Any root vegetable that can be cut into similar size pieces, and that is virtually all root vegetables. I mean, even radishes roast nicely if you've only ever eaten them raw. But you don't even really need a recipe to understand how to roast vegetables. Simply trim and or peel and prepare your root vegetables. However, slice them all into roughly the same size pieces. I would recommend about 1-inch chunks or so. Toss them with a little bit of oil of your choice. Olive oil is always a great standby. Maybe throw in a little sea salt for seasoning, although you can wait till you're done to season for taste. And then you put them into a sheet pan in a 400 or so Fahrenheit degree oven for about 30 minutes. Of course, depending on the heat of your oven and the size of your pieces, it could take a little more or a little less time to finish. And you're going to want to shake them or turn them over about halfway through the cooking time. And then you're going to have nice pieces of root vegetables that are going to start to caramelize and really bring out the natural sweetness and flavor. And those work, like I said, perfectly well as a side dish to whatever meal you want to make. Now, before on the show, I have professed my love for mashed potatoes. I make no secret about that. But mashing or pureeing other root vegetables is an absolutely wonderful way to prepare them. And for people who have never tasted a mashed or pureed root vegetable other than potato or even sweet potato for that matter, I think they are oftentimes surprised at the flavor, the delicious flavor that they can bring to the table. One of my favorite root vegetables to work with is that cousin to the carrot, the parsnip. If you've never had a parsnip but you like carrots, you should definitely try them and try them raw at first. They look kind of like carrots if you've never seen a parsnip, roughly the same shape, but they're a completely different color. Where a carrot might be a beautiful orangish reddish color, a parsnip will be more of a ghostly creamy white color. But don't let the looks fool you, because parsnips by and large are sweeter than carrots, and as you roast them and cook them, they become even sweeter. So get a parsnip, try a little bit raw, see what you think, and then let me share this recipe again in the show notes, kitchencounterpodcast.com/203. I'll actually share this recipe, and this is a honey roasted parsnip and celeriac puree. So we're going to be combining a couple of root vegetables. It will make a wonderful puree that can stand up with most proteins you've put on your plate, but I really like it with pork and beef. So again, recipe in the show notes, but let me just walk through it really quickly to give you an idea of how relatively easy this is to work with. And by the way, if you just take your favorite mashed potato recipe, you can pretty much treat your other root vegetables the same way, beet for beet, just substituting them in, and it should turn out fine. But in the recipe that I have, I want about 1.5 pounds of parsnips and celeriac or celery root. What I would do is I would go and I would pick up relatively small celeriac, and then however much in parsnips you need to make up that weight, I would do that. So 1 celeriac and however many parsnips. 4 cloves of garlic. You want to leave those unpeeled because you're going to roast them in the peel with everything else. About 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1 tablespoon of honey. You're also going to want 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 tablespoons of milk, cream, stock, even water, whatever liquid you're going to want to use when you puree up the veggies. Salt and pepper to taste, and then something for garnish like parsley would be fine. So much as I explained the roasting a moment ago, you want to trim your vegetables. By the way, parsnips function relatively the same as carrots. You're going to want to probably peel them. If they're really big parsnips, remember when I said when you're looking for root vegetables, smaller is usually better. You want to find smaller parsnips. If you have really big parsnips, that's all you can find. Like the thick end of the parsnip is like over an inch, like 1.5 inches more or whatever in diameter. You're probably going to want to cut that thick part in half lengthwise and take out the core of that parsnip, because it can get woody the older and larger the parsnips get. You can do that with a vegetable peeler. You can do that with a paring knife. It's not too difficult to do, but I would recommend that if your parsnips are kind of large. Working with celeriac is a little bit different if you've never worked with it. It's probably the ugliest, or let me just say the most interesting looking root vegetable. But put your vegetable peeler aside. That's not going to do anything to that thing. You're going to need a paring knife or something, a knife of some sort, and you're just going to cut the top off, cut the greens off, right? Cut the bottom off to make it flat, and then set it down on your cutting board and just sort of take off the sides all the way around. You're probably going to lose some of the flesh as you're taking off the skin. Don't worry about it. do the best you can, but just understand it's not going to be a beautiful, perfectly shaved celeriac. You just go with the flow. You're going to lose a little flesh, not a big deal. Cut all those up, the celeriac, the parsnips, into about 1-inch chunks, all roughly equally sized. Toss them in the olive oil. Also, I like to toss in the honey at the same time, and the garlic as well. I like to toss them all at the same time and then put them on the sheet pan rather than drizzling the honey on after I put them on the sheet pan, because I feel it wastes so much honey. Half of the honey goes right onto the sheet pan and misses the veggies. So I just like to toss them and sort of coat them at the beginning. Toss those in a 400 degree Fahrenheit oven on a sheet pan for 30 minutes, but about 15 minutes through, you're going to want to move and shake those and turn those pieces over. The extra honey you really have to watch, because you don't want to burn your vegetable pieces. You want them to turn nice and brown and caramelized, but you don't want them to burn. So you can't just let them go for 30 minutes. You'll probably end up burning them. So you're going to want to toss them and move them around a bit halfway through. Now, at the end of that 30 minutes, or roughly when the parsnips and the celeriac is soft and you can easily puncture it with a fork, you're pretty much ready to puree them. So take those out, put them in a food processor. You can use a potato masher if you want. It's a little more elbow grease, and you might not get quite the silky puree. But I like to put mine in a food processor. Peel the garlic by just squeezing them, and the garlic will come right out of the peels. Drop those in the food processor as well. With some melted butter, a couple of tablespoons, go ahead and put the lid on and start pureeing. And as it does that, you want to, through the feeder tube of your food processor, you're going to start drizzling in your liquid, whether that's cream or milk or stock or water or whatever. I said 2 tablespoons, but that's just a guideline. It might take more, it might take less to get to the consistency you want. So do that until you have a puree that works for you. Salt and pepper it to taste. Mix it back up and plate it, and you're ready to go. Garnish it with your celery, garnish it with your parsley or whatever you'd like to garnish it with. By the way, you could make this puree with all parsnips if you wanted to, and it would be delicious. But I love the celeriac because it adds this subtle celery flavor and just this herbiness and a kind of a brightness and a sharpness that you don't quite get just from the parsnips. But you should end up with this beautiful honey tan colored puree, like I said, that goes really great with beef, pork, probably wonderful with chicken. And again, I think will be quite surprising to the folks who have never tried either parsnips or celeriac. So again, I'll put that recipe on the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/203. All right. Well, I guess I've been going on for quite a while about root vegetables, and I know I didn't get super deep and I didn't touch on all of everybody's favorite root vegetables, but there's just too much to talk about. I hope though that I've demystified a little bit about what a root vegetable is, some common ways that you can deal with and prepare and incorporate root vegetables into your cooking. And if nothing else, the next time you reach for a bag of potatoes, maybe you'll think, I wonder if turnips would be good instead of potatoes, or in addition to potatoes, or something like that. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for one more episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I hope you found some of that basic information about root vegetables useful and interesting. And remember, all of the show notes will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/203. Don't forget to head over to Instagram or Facebook and look for hashtag cooking prompts to get the weekly cooking prompts that I'm doing every week. Again, 1 or 2 sentence ideas that might give you some inspiration or an idea for things to try out in the kitchen. Those have been a lot of fun to put together, so I hope you take. All right, everybody, this is Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I'll see you in a couple of weeks with another episode. But until next time, happy cooking. Yes, on the Nitty Grits Network. And last but not least, if you find some value in the show and you think your friends or your family might as well, I encourage you to share it with them. And if they don't know how to find podcasts, if they've never listened to a podcast before, take a couple of minutes and show them how to find it. I think they might like my show, but I know they'll definitely love some show out there. There's something for everybody in the world of podcasting, and it's too good of a thing to keep it from people. So share the love.